He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on there and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guess.
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks. But super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench, an hour later, but still better than ever here on 1430 ESPN, Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Good to have you. Good to be here after some Giants baseball here on the airwaves. Giants baseball. Giants get a win 5-1 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. You just listened to it. Big thanks to the crew there for tossing it to us for the rest of the afternoon. We're here live on 1430 ESPNFresno.com. We're here live on 1430 AM, and we're here live on the ESPN Fresno app. Good to be here. Good to be alongside wonderful people here in the Central Valley. Going to be a good show today. A shorter show, like I said, 2 hours, taking you up to 6 o'clock tonight. And then you get a chance to flip on over to 790 for the FPU Sunbird Sports Show. So get a chance to listen to some sports talk here. Get over to 790 for Paul Metters and his Wednesday weekly show, talking all things FPU Sunbirds. Can't wait for that in terms of our programming tonight. Over on 790 right now, A's and Red Sox, you can listen to it live right now all the way up till 6 o'clock, like you said, but then we will have the FPU Sunbird Sports Show take over there. Lee's Air Hotline, Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating and Roofing, all sponsoring the Lee's Air Hotline. 559-320-1430 is the way to reach our show. 559-320-1430, the way to reach the show here on our airwaves. The Lee's Air Weather Check, sitting at 99 degrees, according to my phone here. It is just hovering around that wonderful triple-digit number. Not quite there yet, though. I'm gonna not qualifying it there yet. But we're on a flood watch, folks. Tomorrow, some rain, some potential issues. I don't know what I'm looking at there, Chloe. It's fine. we got a flood watch. Folks, it sounds like it's going to be dumping rain tomorrow in thunderstorms and all of that lovely stuff. So get ready for that. Should be nice, actually. We'll be sitting here. Or no, we'll be over at Fashion Furniture, so I won't even get a chance to look out the window to check it out. Anyways, I might. Usually when it rains at Fashion Furniture, I stick my head out the door and I just take a peek from time to time during the breaks. Regardless, we'll get some much-needed rain here in the Central Valley tomorrow. And then I think it'll clear up just in time for some football Friday, for the Friday Night Lights situation as well. So we're good on the weather front there. Of course, excited to bring a good show to you today. Full 2 hours, like I said, coming up in about 15 minutes or so, 10, 15 minutes or so. JB Long, voice of the Rams, is going to join me here on the Lee's Air Hotline, getting our first chance to talk to JB Long about this 2-0 start for the Los Angeles Rams and what this Eagles game can mean moving forward. Of course, a lot of conversation around this football game this week. Talk a lot of football here at the beginning as well. We're going to do a little just quick hitter previews of all three teams that we air here. And so talking to the Niners, talking to the Raiders. And then my buddy Eric Bentley will be joining me in the 5 o'clock hour talking just all things Giants. We'll get into the Giants conversation. What do they actually have left with 10 games to go? We'll pick the games of the week. That's right. We're going to do a Bonatti Blitz today because of an abbreviated schedule on Friday. So no time to get into the Bonatti Blitz on Friday. I am going to pick the games of the week today. That's what we're going to do. A little daily spread as well surrounding Major League Baseball and make it happen here on this wonderful Wednesday afternoon. It is a different crew behind the glass today. Third different producing crew for this week, but it's good to have the revolving door. Good to have the people that are in. Jorge is out today, and so in his stead, Joe Gomez is producing today. The rare Joe Gomez produced show. Joe, Hopefully you know how to get the mic on over there. How are you doing on this Wednesday afternoon?
Am I open?
Can you hear me? I can hear you. You're on air.
I hear myself too. Sorry. There's like an echo here.
Oh, fun.
Turn this off. There it is. Oh, I can hear myself now, but then we can't hear Phil. All right, whatever. This is fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, what's up, guys? Hello, everybody.
How are we doing, Joe?
I'm doing all right. I'm preparing for tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow is going to be rough for you, buddy. It's still baseball season for you.
No, yeah, for sure. I got my Mariners hat on today, so.
For those who have not followed the things of shows and everything like that, Joe's a Dolphins fan.
Yeah.
Joe's going to have a rough go of it. What would make you more mad? Would it make you more mad if the Dolphins just randomly win tomorrow? What would that do for you? is that the funnier result?
Honestly, that's a hilarious. I think that's never going to happen.
But what if?
I don't like to play these what if games because it's not happening. They're not beating Buffalo, man. And if it happens, then yeah, what do you think? Do you think they far still? I mean, they're not going to.
No, it will prolong just the inevitable and perpetual torture.
Below average, and we were supposed to be the up and coming team, and now the AFC East is just flying by. Even the Jets, I think they're going to beat us this year too.
It's going to be crazy.
Go Mariners!
You got the Jets next week too. So.
Yeah, I know that's what I'm saying.
Just going through the tour to AFC East.
It's going to be a rough stretch, and just to be embarrassed by all you guys is really sad.
It's great. It's great.
Go Mariners! Let's talk about baseball.
Yeah, hey, Chloe, how are we doing on this Wednesday afternoon? Chloe, for the first time in this week.
I'm doing fabulous today.
Yeah. Better than Joe?
Much better than Joe.
Much better than Joe. It's good to know.
At least, like I said, my Mariners are doing something. Out of all my teams right now.
You're going to win the division, aren't you?
I hope so.
We might be facing, my Red Sox and your Mariners might be in a wild card series here.
That would be a great matchup, right? Yeah. I mean, Mariners are a little more hot right now.
I know.
So you better hope they cool off.
We don't have Roman Anthony. It's going to be
a little
tougher.
Bleak, right?
He'll be out to the ALCS, they said. So we have to make the ALCS.
Oh, wow.
For him to be back for the postseason.
I knew he had an oblique, but I didn't know it was that bad.
They could push it to the DS, but it just all depends.
Well, let's just hope they meet early and Seattle plays them without Mr. Anthony there.
We'll see.
That guy's good, man.
I kind of want to get above the Astros, though. I want to send the Astros to you guys.
I would love to have the Astros just not make the playoffs. I hope they just miss out by half.
I think they're locked in there.
I don't think so. Because they're what? Two games ahead
they're
of
half
you guys,
game
right?
above us. Yeah. They're a half game below the Yankees, and we're about 2.5 above the Cleveland Guardians.
Guardians are 79-71. Yeah.
The Guardians are the only realistic shot.
You guys have 82 wins.
82-69 the Red Sox are right now. So.
Okay. Man, there's still a chance they miss out. I think you can miss. Come on, Guardians.
Right. okay. As far as sports talk and everything like that, we're talking baseball here at the beginning, but I want to get into football as well.
Oh.
I know. But we don't have to talk about your team tomorrow. We'll talk about that later in the show. let's talk about some news coming up here from the Niners. And it was reported from Adam Schefter. This is a top sports story brought to you by Valley Pure that Brock Purdy seems to be working towards playing this game on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals. This will be an interesting development to see where that moves forward for this 49ers team. If it is, in fact, that Purdy can play this Sunday. But the question always persists of whether you push or whether you give him rest and get him ready for other games down the stretch. Feels like when they gave the 2 to 5 week timetable that I thought that was them being cautious. I wonder if pushing Brock Purdy to play this week is a matter of how big this game could be, or do you feel like this is a mistake to see if the Niners are going to allow Purdy to play here potentially, despite the prognosis.
I mean, the original diagnosis was, like you said, 2 to 5 weeks.
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean, there's obviously something wrong with him. And all of a sudden, the next week, they're like, oh, yeah, he can play. It's, I don't know. So it feels a little forced.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I understand, you know, the division game, this is big. Cardinals are 2-0.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nice to have your guy back, but to force him back and, you know, more injury I miss Moody over there because I made the game so fun. But, it's tough because you want him back, like I said, the division game, all that. But at the same time, I don't know, man. I'm so torn on this because I understand it. I understand why you want him back. But just to sit there and let him get healthy and, you know, whether it's a toe or not, I hope I don't want him to get hurt again.
Well, is it?
I don't
is
want,
it
I like
is,
Purdy.
Is the hesitation just simply because we saw what happened to Joe Burrow?
Right.
And Joe Burrow's injury got more significant than Brock Purdy's ever did. But you could have a situation where that happens in terms of it. But it's interesting under that lens, because if it was just Purdy dealing with a toe injury, we didn't have Joe Burrow hurt like that. I feel like people would be like, ah, it's fine, it's just a toe. But because of the severity of Burrow, we all are colored under that expectation of like, well, if you lose Purdy for 3 months, there's no realistic shot this Niners team could weather that storm.
Yeah, and there's a list of players that, you know, are rushed back, forced back, and they re-aggravate, you know, further hurt, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's the way I see it too. Just why risk it? It's a game, you know. One, I know it's a big division game, but it's week three. It's not save Purdy. I think if he's hurt, keep him on the sideline. Mac Jones didn't look horrible, right? He didn't look horrible. He looked serviceable. I know you don't have anything good to say about Mac Jones, but
even in a blind, what is it? Even a blind or a broke clock's fixed twice. Twice in a day.
I mean, that was a quarterback Shanahan wanted it originally, right? So
yeah, he wanted to draft. Chloe, how do you feel? Do you feel like they should rush Purdy like this, or do you feel like Purdy deserves to have the timetable he wants and see if he can start against Arizona?
I think they need to, again, it's miss 1 week and save it for 3 months versus have him play 1 week and he's out for 3 months. Every athlete, every coach knows that you don't want to risk rushing an athlete back into the game, back into the practice. So, yeah, I did see today that he was limited mm-hmm. with his toe and his shoulder.
That's right, the shoulder still too.
Yeah, that's still out there. So I know it's a big game, but Mac Jones, even just looking at his stats compared to Purdy in the first game, like he's even. It's 279 to 277 passing yards, and he has good communication with the team, whereas I'm not worried if we just pull Purdy from one more game.
I think you wait if I'm the Niners. I understand, though. Let's say week one was not a win over the Seahawks. It was a win over, I don't know, like Houston or something like that. And they were 2-0 in that fashion, then I would be like, yeah, I kind of want the one division win to start my season off. But because the Niners are already 1-0 in the division, I don't feel like losing this game is absolutely like an absolute killer for the 49ers. It'd be disappointing if they do lose this football game. But like we say all the time in the NFL, it's not about winning the individual battles. It's about winning the war. It's winning the Super Bowl. Getting to the end is usually the healthiest. And the Niners right now are not the healthiest team in the National Football League.
That's why I'm at a loss for words sometimes, because it's like you should be doing the right thing and letting them sit an extra week because you're full of injuries all the time. You should know better. They should know better. And that's why I get yes, it's a division game, but sit him, man. If he's hurt, he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, maybe they're scared of what the Cardinals will do this year. I mean, maybe they know Cardinals might be a little better than people think, and they don't want to go down a game, and maybe it comes down to that game at the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand it, but why? Why risk your guy? Why?
Well, because you theoretically feel like you're going to be healthier in week 11 when you go face Arizona in Arizona. And so the idea of it is you get two shots at every division team. So you don't feel like, while this game weighs in the sense of it matters a lot in terms of winning it and having a good divisional record, in the same sense as you do get a second shot at beating this team as opposed to the one shot you do against, I don't know, who's going to be a team that you'll be competing similarly to, the Buccaneers. Like, you get that one shot against the Buccaneers, it'd be nice to get a win over the Buccaneers and have that, you know, head-to-head situation. So, it's to monitor. I feel like you shouldn't start him. I feel like he won't start altogether. I think Kyle's a little more hesitant on it. I got to believe that the Niners are capable of beating Arizona. Arizona certainly was not remarkable in their first two games, holding off the Saints and holding off the Panthers.
The Panthers one was bad because they were up big and then they just let them come back.
Just let them kind of come back and get back into it. So
that's kind of scary to see them do.
Yeah, so I'm not really sold on Arizona as this big power in the NFC West, but wins are wins, and in the National Football League, no win is easy for any team. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to say the least. Before I let the segment go, Cody, who are the Niners playing?
The Cardinals.
Yeah.
It's not as Like, you can't really hear it as much, I guess. She's trying right now.
Just full transparency. Cardinals. Chloe has a hard time saying the name Cardinals.
For 30 minutes today, I got made fun of by everyone in here about how I say Cardinals. And I am a St. Louis Cardinals fan, so I've pronounced it the same way my whole life. And no one's ever had an issue until Phil did today at about 2:30 p.m. Now that Phil's mentioned
it, I can't unhear it.
It is clear as day.
I hear the Cardinals. I can't even do it.
Hey, Carter agrees with me. It's the California accent.
I don't know if it's a California thing.
Because we're talking about mountains and mountains. And I was like, but that's not the same thing. She's like adding Cardinals.
Cardinals.
St. Louis Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, Cardinals.
That's what she's putting. Cardinals. She is putting a D at the end of L.
She says Cardinals.
She's putting a D between the L and the S at the end of Cardinals.
I'm really working on it, guys.
Cardinals.
Chloe, we can grow and we can progress and we can get better.
I will forever say Cardinals.
You will buck this trend. We will, by the end of the year, you are going to be a completely fluent speaker in the terms of all NFL football teams this season. We believe in you, Chloe.
Thank you.
We believe in you. What is your favorite baseball team?
The St. Louis Cardinals.
Cardinals. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, JB Long going to join us here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the voice of the Rams, next on the Central Valley's Sports Leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader here on this Wednesday afternoon. Excited to bring on our next guest who I got a chance to talk to just a little bit earlier today, talking about the LA Rams, about their season, the quickest 2-0. The quietest 2-0, I would say. I bring that up really at the beginning of the conversation. But Rams are playing good football. They got a massive game coming up this Sunday against the Eagles. So JB Long joined me earlier, and here is that interview you're hearing for the first time today. JB Long, voice of the Rams. All right, we're joined by JB Long, the voice of the Rams, on the Lee's Air Hotline. Pleased to have him for the first time this season. Excited to talk some Rams football. 2-0 Rams start. Always great when we're talking about that. JB, been too long. How are we doing on this this Wednesday afternoon?
Phil, I'm doing great. Thank you for the invitation, and thanks for your patience with me. It's good to speak to you and your audience again.
Fantastic. And I mentioned this on my show yesterday. Out of all of the 2-0 starts, it's a sneaking suspicion to me that I feel like of the national talking points, the Rams have the quietest 2-0, and maybe that's exactly where they want to be. Do you share that sentiment in the way they've started this season?
You probably have a better visibility to that than I do, but I can understand why that's true if it is true. Anytime you play the AFC South, I would say that's collectively the least followed division in the National Football League, and the Rams have played two non-island, non-primetime games, a home game and a featured CBS window, albeit against the Houston Texans in the solid win, and then a regional road game against the Titans. So that could play into it partly, I would say. And that's just fine to be flying under the radar, I think. Here comes another one, a game that I think a lot of us might have ticketed for primetime, a rematch of the divisional round loss to Philadelphia. And the Rams are going to roll into Philly and play in the early window after the Eagles have the kickoff contest against the Cowboys and then the Super Bowl rematch at Arrowhead. And, you know, I think the Rams are going to have to be at their best, but it wouldn't hurt at all if the Eagles were a little bit sluggish and a little bit relaxed after two really big openers to begin their defense.
Yeah, certainly, and it is as good as you can ask for, especially with the most recent few seasons in terms of the starts. You know, we mentioned it last year. What was it, a 1-4 start? I think it was something like that. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but you know, the 2-0 start to this season, especially with what is at stake in this conference. You know, I will say I want to highlight that first in terms of how this team has gotten off to the right foot and taking care of business against teams that we know how tough the Texans were. We saw that on Monday night against the Buccaneers. But in terms of that start, how would you feel the sense around the building is of, okay, this is obviously something we have been wanting to correct over the last few years going into the beginning of this season?
I think it's validating. I think it's really important. It gives the Rams a little bit of margin, and I think it takes a lot of the pressure off this weekend so that they can go shoot their shot. I mean, this is not a must-win by any sense. In Philadelphia, it's an opportunity to send a message and to maybe gain some standing head-to-head in a really thick NFC playoff picture. But, yeah, a faster start this year was essential for lots of reasons, including the fact that they had made a little bit of history by rallying from three games below 500 at their bye the last two campaigns to make the playoffs. There's a reason why that was unprecedented, and they dare not attempt it again. But I also think in terms of where they are in their organizational evolution, you know, they got a 37-year-old quarterback in his 17th campaign who missed all of training camp with a disc issue in his back. Like, if the Rams got to a bad place going into this year's trade deadline, I'm not sure that they'd be able to justify hanging on for dear life and riding this out until the bitter end. So this is great to be on a much more positive footing, especially when you look around the division and you see that there's only been one loss taken by the NFC West collectively, and that was head-to-head in the opener in Seattle. The 49ers get the Seahawks. They're the only ones who have lost the game so far. So in terms of their relative standing, LA hasn't done anything yet except maintain middle ground.
Certainly, and I mean, if you look ahead at what's facing them, and the next 4 weeks are massive, you could say, in terms of the caliber of opponent. But before we get into that, let's dive into what we've seen from this Rams team. And the Rams, you know, have certainly found ways to win in different ways. I want to just highlight, and I want to take your perspective to it. Play of the game in week one, Nate Landman. This is a guy that I think people need to know about. I think one of the more epic punch outs I've ever seen in a football game. His impact and what he's been bringing to the defensive side, what stands out about him?
Remarkably savvy free agent signing. Someone that the Falcons said, you know what, we're good. Go ahead and find other work. And the Rams signed him in free agency for a veteran minimum deal. And he has come in and not just earned a starting job, but earned a starting job that comes with the green dot at middle linebacker, and then earned a C on his chest as a team captain. And he's contributed to two takeaways in two games and has probably already outperformed his predecessors by a significant margin. And I would say, Phil, he ties in directly to this game against Philadelphia. He is here along with Puna Ford, a defensive tackle, specifically because of Saquon Barkley and the havoc that he wreaked head-to-head in two games against the Rams last season. If not for that chore, that to-do list item, I'm not sure that the Rams are even looking for someone like Nate Landman this offseason. But he's arrived. He's a big difference maker. And we'll find out just how much on Sunday because, again, this is why he's been plugged in the middle of this defense, is to help solve a problem like Saquon Barkley and Jalen Hurts and this Eagles rushing attack.
Yeah, this Eagles rushing attack, which certainly has been the thorn in the side for the Rams last year, especially in the playoff game. Obviously, forecasts do not call for snowstorms on Sunday, so I think we're in a little bit of a different controlled environment. Do you feel like that can be a difference in this game in terms of where the Rams can set up and what seems like a pretty neutral atmosphere in Philadelphia, and to see what this defense can do to improve against what we've seen, which was Saquon Barkley running free the last couple games?
Well, so I think this game's a truth teller. It's a measuring stick. How much are the Rams improved from last January? Maybe who did the weather really benefit last year? I think you can make the case that it helped the Eagles and slowed down the Rams' offense. I think you can make the case that it helped the Eagles and made the Rams' defense play on thin ice as they tried to track down Saquon and Hurts for most of that game. So, yeah, I think more neutral, favorable conditions weather-wise, as you described, middle of the day instead of in prime time in the snow. But in terms of where have the Rams improved at key positions, and not just on the defense, but I would say bringing Coleman Shelton back as their starting center. You know, they had some protection busts throughout last year that were really costly, no more costly than Jalen Carter getting up the middle and getting to Matthew Stafford as they look to complete that comeback on that final drive. So Yeah, it's all those things. And it's great that it happens in September, because this is not going to be the final verdict. Like, if the Rams win and they are better and they are improved, great. They still got to, you know, carry it through a 17-game season and into the playoffs. And if they're not, if the Eagles are still the reigning champions and the better team, then the Rams have some runway to continue to bolster their roster and to make the necessary improvements, so that if they are fortunate enough to earn a rematch in this year's postseason, maybe that's where they can break through. But no franchise has been a bigger thorn in the side of Sean McVay's Rams, going back to when he was hired in 2017, than these Philadelphia Eagles.
Speaking to the offensive side of the ball, and the Rams certainly got it going against the Titans late down the stretch, you know. I want Puka Nacua. I know we continue to say everything we can about him, but week one he gets stitches, and then week two he continues to provide that kind of production. You know, I know we say what he can be capable of and what he has shown the last couple of years, but is there realistically a way of saying he's taken even a further step forward as a wide receiver?
I think that's possible. I think he's put in better circumstances, largely because of your guy, Davante Adams. I mean, Devontae's impact has been undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
Puka is playing in the slot more than he ever has before. He's basically playing that Cooper Kupp role where Kupp thrived for, you know, what, seven seasons here in Los Angeles, including one of the all-time great seasons in football history, the Super Bowl year, his MVP campaign, and his Triple Crown season. And yeah, I think really what I felt strongly is that Puka had taken the step to the elite tier in the National Football League last year. He just missed too much time for the counting stats to translate to the accolades that typically come with a season like that. He wasn't an all-pro. He wasn't a Pro Bowler. He wasn't in the Offensive Player of the Year conversation. But if you look at the underlying metrics, the advanced stats that really correlate with year-over-year success, Puka was the number one receiver last year. He was Pro Football Focus's number one receiver last year. And so what I see through 2 weeks is just validation that those who watch closely in his sophomore campaign, he really emerged to wide receiver one status and should be talked about as such with the Jeffersons of the world and the greats in the sport, including one that we'll see this week, A.J. Brown.
He's certainly been helping me get to 2-0 in my fantasy as well, so that'll work. You mentioned Javonte, and you pointed out that his presence on the field has been a benefit to Puka and the entirety of the way this offense flows. What specifically do you really enjoy about seeing what you've seen from Davante Adams through two games with the Los Angeles Rams?
Well, he too is a solve for what the Rams lacked last year, which is someone who can win against man coverage. And through two games, we've seen large swaths of that. The Rams bogged down against physical press corners last year and defenses that could blitz them and play man, and with a quarterback who doesn't scramble, not have to pay the price. That's no longer the case, because the time to throw for Matthew Stafford has dropped to career low levels, and that's because Davante Adams is always open. And any time that Matthew is feeling the heat, he can just send it Devontae's way, and more often than not, good things will happen. Sometimes that's a catch. Other times it's been a penalty, as Devontae has racked up plenty of those. And even when he's not the target, Phil, he has changed the math for these two defenses, Houston and Tennessee, that Stafford and the Rams have faced so far. He has taken two elite corners, Snead last week and Stingley the week before, and forced them to travel with him. And guess what that means? Puka's seen no better than the second best cornerback at all times. And that's where the synergy there is so strong, is because, yes, Puka, like I just said, is one of the best receivers in the sport right now, but there's a force multiplying effect because of Davante Adams' Hall of Fame credentials and the coverage respect that he still demands on a down-to-down basis.
And then I'm from Stafford, you know, in the way he's – so much was made about this lead up to the season and the way he's been obviously dealing with an injury. He comes in and he seems like business as usual. Was it just an do you feel like it was just kind of a necessary time needed to step away, or do you see lingering effects in the Safford side of things with it? Or I know it's hard to diagnose from the broadcast booth, but does it feel like normal Stafford from what we've seen from the concerns from this preseason in the first couple of games?
I mean, paradoxically, the concerns are real. The health struggle is real. But the performance has outperformed. Like, it's strange to me that Stafford is getting subpar protection from his offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no traditional running game to speak of through 2 weeks. He's a year older, and his back isn't feeling great, and yet he's off to a career-best start. Like, it looks really, really good. And so how do you reconcile those two things? I think it's having a terrific architect and play caller in Sean McVay. I think it's being motivated and having a chip on his shoulder like he does. And then I think it's having maybe the best, you know, receiving tandem in the game, giving him really good answers to complex problems.
And then you do mention it, the line hasn't been stepping into it as far, and you mentioned Stafford's getting a little bit of pressure here and there. No interior defensive line is probably more dangerous than this Philadelphia Eagles line. Is that where the game can be won potentially, or how that game can be determined if the Rams can find ways to, I don't know if it, I don't think neutralize is the option, but try to find some way to avoid the disasters that can be in the interior of that line, whether it's through the run game or just keeping Stafford on his feet?
Yeah, I mean, I know the conditions were disastrous weather-wise, but both quarterbacks got hit. They got pummeled in last year's playoff game, and Stafford wore it and nearly guided his team to victory, and Hurts scrambled enough and made enough winning plays with his feet, and then had Saquon Barkley to take care of the rest to carry them to victory. But I think that's the crux of the matter. You could argue that's always the case in the NFL and at all levels of football, but I think that's probably where this game is won or lost on Sunday. If Matthew Stafford is upright, I think this is a better Rams offense than Philadelphia. It's a more balanced, more complete offense than Philadelphia's. The Eagles are in a world of hurt right now, for just being fair, which is not to say that, you know, after a slow start last year, they caught fire and were arguably one of the best offenses we've ever seen. It could be the case again this year, but, you know, Hurts hasn't completed a pass between 10 and 20 yards yet this season. You know, he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass this season. It has been largely because of their defense and their running game that they have gutted their way to 2-0 with a new offensive coordinator. And I can't imagine there's a whole lot of confidence inspired for those who follow the Philadelphia Eagles and live in that city and love this team, that here they are again in early 2025 with this uneasy feeling about, wait a second, what happened to our Super Bowl MVP? You know, where is our passing game gone? We have Devontae and we have AJ. Why are we not lighting the world on fire like we were doing last January and February?
The emergence of Blake Corum, is he forcing the hand of McVay? And are you seeing obviously a little more utilization in him and in the run game? Is he forcing the hand of McVay a little bit in his performance?
I'll be curious to see. I mean, the difference was undeniable. I still think Kyron Williams is the starting back. I still think he's your lead tailback. But there was some pop to Blake Corum, and maybe that's good for Kyron Williams. It's definitely what the Rams need offensively. So I know this, the Rams are loyal, but they're not going to make losing football decisions just based on tenure or contract. If Blake Corum gives them a chance to move the ball more efficiently on the ground, he's going to get his opportunity more frequently and sooner rather than later. So hopefully, collectively, the Rams can start to move some chains with their running game to take some of that pressure, not just physical but mental, off of Matthew Stafford, because he has completely carried the load through two wins so far.
I wanted to just talk about this stretch of football, obviously, with this I mentioned the four games here, and for people who don't know what the stretch is, Rams are going to be in Philly, and then it's a home game against this Colts team that's been a little surprising to start for some people. Short weeks against this 49ers team, which I think I've seen reports already Purdy could be back, especially even in this game coming up on week three. They'll see those reports. But and then the Ravens is the next one after that. So this four-game stretch, and then if you want to even throw in the London game afterwards, so five-game stretch before the bye. JB, this feels like a weather the storm kind of situation for the Rams in terms of the schedule. This is, I think, the toughest stretch based off of what we've seen so far. What do you make of this stretch of season for the Rams?
Yeah, I think it's well stated, and it's going to sound like I'm tamping down expectations for the 2-0 Los Angeles Rams, which I don't intend to do. But in terms of schedule management and staying on or ahead of pace, that's why the 2-0 start is so important. They're underdogs this week, let's face it. They're going to need to play a really good game to beat Philadelphia, and even if they play a great game, they may not come back victorious. But then you've got two home games in 5 days against those Colts and those 49ers. And the secret to the Rams' success in their last two seasons and their comeback to get to 10 wins and an NFC West title last year and the playoffs twice, it has been winning those home back-to-backs. They did it in 23. They did it in 24. And if the Rams can get past San Francisco at 3-2 or 4-1, then they get a mini bye feeling great about where they stand. Then they get to, you know, take the weekend to prepare for one of the best teams in the sport, Baltimore, and again, go shoot your shot there against the Ravens. And if you can get one of those two games, either Baltimore or Jacksonville, then again, you're at your physical bye, your actual bye, at or above 500. And wouldn't that be a refreshing change of posture from where they've been the last two seasons? Because I do think there are a lot of wins to be had in the back half of the schedule. And more importantly, that's where all the division games rest. That home game, Thursday Night Football against San Francisco, that's the only NFC West game the Rams play in the top half of their schedule. All the games against Seattle, both of the games against Arizona, and the other one against San Francisco, all way down the line. So that's where I feel like this game against the Eagles feels like a playoff rematch, feels like a potential NFC championship game, but it's not anywhere close to the most consequential contest coming up even anytime soon for the Los Angeles Rams.
What would a win over the Eagles change in terms of perception of the Rams? Does that make them NFC number ones? What do you think that would do for the perception of the Rams in terms of the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Green Bay Packers, because of the Micah Parsons trade and because of their two solid victories and the fashion in which they've won them so far, has probably captured a lot of the imagination of those who follow and do power rankings and those sorts of things. It doesn't much matter, because I think what it would do is it would get the Rams off to a 3-0 start and put them firmly in the conversation for competing for the one seed and the bye and the home field advantage that comes with it. Now, that's way too early a race to be, you know, setting up in September. But the magnitude of this game is that it's very likely that if you're going to be in the playoff picture in the NFC, you're going to be measured against the Philadelphia Eagles. If you end up with the same record, this head-to-head is going to dictate who finishes top or bottom in that tiebreaker, right? So these are the types of wins that if you stack, then you start playing for bigger prizes down the stretch, not just to maybe win your division and get into the playoffs, but also seeding and home field advantage and maybe even that bye in the wild card round.
By the way, I think we had an addition to the injury report. I saw McVay had an injury in the sideline. How's he doing? Do we know his status for the next week?
I talked to him Sunday after the game and again Monday night on his coach's show after he popped that plantar fascia, and he actually seemed kind of relieved to have done it. Strangely, it's like better to tear that thing, it sounds like, and just be done with it than to have it strained and stretched and sore and nagging. So, a little Advil this week. I don't know that he's going to be in a boot or a walking stroller or anything, but he knows the importance of this game, and he will not be appearing on this week's injury report. He's not going to be questionable or doubtful. He's going to be a sure thing for Sunday in Philadelphia.
Well, we can't wait, and you could listen to Jamie Long and the crew call the game this week on 1430. Pregame start at 9 a.m., I believe, is the time for us here in the Pacific time zone. So, JB, appreciate it. We'll chat with you down the road, but best of luck and have fun on the call this weekend in Philly.
Good to catch up with you and everyone there in the Central Valley. Hope everybody's doing well. Have a good rest of your show and night.
All right, we'll be right back with more Behind the Bench right after this on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. Big thanks to JB Long for joining us in that last segment. We'll get JB on maybe during the bye week of the Rams coming up after that London game later this season. So interesting stretch, like I said. The Rams got some fun teams down the stretch, like we pointed it out to you in terms of it. Rams are going to be taking on the Eagles this week, and then it's the Colts, and then it's the Niners, and then it's the Ravens, and then it's the Jags in Wembley. So should be interesting. Should be interesting to pay attention to. That's the toughest stretch, I would say, for the Rams this season. News broke during this hour. I wanted to just do a little quick mention of it. Transfer window for the NCAA. I don't know if it's just strictly to the football side of things. I got to believe it is. The spring transfer window is no more, according to the NCAA. Eliminating the spring transfer window. I don't know if I have a full article on it just quite yet, but it is just being reported and trickling in. But that is the name. That is the news. And now we'll be shifting to a single portal window for football players and athletes throughout. So actually, the more I think about this, the more it makes sense that it's just singularly to the football side of things. So makes it interesting. I wonder if it'll curb any sort of massive transfer situations, especially in the springtime, especially in those times. Curious to see if it is going to be interesting to see what this will affect in terms of the trend of transfers. I believe the transfer rules still exist if a coach gets fired and players still have the ability with, I think, 30 days or something like that to transfer after a coach gets fired. We had that win or leaves, unexpectedly leaves, like Jeff Tedford did when the Fresno State Bulldogs had it last year. But I don't know if this totally fixes the problem. At least it's a movement in the direction of trying to fix what is a problem of the transfer situation. But I don't know. I think I have to see it in practice for me to really understand its impact. But at least there is something to curb the issues out there. Joe, Chloe, what do you make of this news? Spring transfer portal window eliminated, and we're shifting to a singular portal window as well.
Yay.
You like it.
I like it. Yeah. I think they're abusing that portal. It's being abused. You can't have, I don't know, just I feel like every team is different every year now. And I mean, it's benefiting a lot of the bigger schools than anything, I feel, too. I mean, any small school that finds its players and get their player poached instantly. So
yeah.
I think it's good for everyone, and it'll help keep some continuity for a lot of the smaller schools. And yeah, I'm tired of seeing like good players, you know, from the small schools instantly go to Georgia or Alabama or something. I'm over it.
What do you make of it, Chloe? Transfer window.
I agree. I like it. And I feel like it's just people have abused the transfer portal now. Like in the recent years, once it changed to being an open portal and everything, like I remember hearing like the horror stories about wanting to transfer and you to like bring it to your coach to like sign and everything. And now, yeah, we're just the team feels different every single year. And it's not even that, every semester it feels different. So I like this.
At least it still doesn't fix the issue right now. And I know there's many issues to the transfer portal that still is probably going to exist. One big one to me is the issue in the postseason when we get to bowl season and all those situations when players are sitting out of those games and we get situations where I'm recalling a game maybe 2 years ago when Georgia just absolutely destroyed somebody. I think it was Miami or I can't remember who it was in the Orange Bowl. It was Florida State, when Florida State missed the playoff by a spot and Georgia went 67 on them or something crazy like that because Florida State had nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Because everyone left after. That's right. That's right. Yeah. I do remember that.
Yeah.
That was way late in the season too.
It was the Orange Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there's so many, like you said, so many things wrong with college football right now. And for me personally, I'm a Miami fan, and Miami's killing it right now. And
yeah.
It almost doesn't feel real. I don't know what it is. Like, obviously, I'm excited. I want them to keep winning. They're destroying teams, but I don't know. It just it feels fabricated. It feels a little just a team.
Well, the coaches feel burnt out. Coaches feel burnt out because you have to do two levels of recruiting. You have to do two levels of one being the high school recruits and one being the
transfer.
We're the transfer portal. Yeah. And what do you have? And when can you get conversations with those kids who want to be out in certain situations? And I always said it's going to bear out in the transfer portal that kids are going to realize you can't just transfer because you're not exactly happy with the situation you're not happy with. When you're stuck in those situations, it allows, you know, sometimes there's not anything afforded to you. There's only so many spots in college football that can be afforded to it. And some kids don't get that opportunity. And some places a little bit better, maybe, or a little bit worse.
I think that's what it, you know, really comes down to, too. You know, I'm not starting here. I don't want to play here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you said, there's no accountability with that. Just I'm out of here. I don't, you know, no fighting for it. And that's got to do something to some of these
I heard
talents.
Something interesting from Pat Hill, though, the other day about the transfer portal. He's like, think of it in the flip side, though. You screw up on a guy, and you recruit a guy that may not be able to make it or shake it in your program. At least that's a more affordable option as opposed to
for him to just be going. Yeah, I guess
you don't have to feel the pain of giving a 4-year scholarship.
But I mean, obviously, you don't ever want that to happen.
No, of course not. But sometimes there's just like, hey, it's just not working out for you, bud. And
there's other opportunity elsewhere.
You can work with a coach I had before.
How often do you think that's happening compared to, like, I'm not starting, I don't want to be
certainly
here.
More often than you think, I would think.
So, but would you put that, like, anywhere close to kids just be like, I'm not starting here?
Potentially.
Really?
Yeah. It is a merry-go-round of all things in sports. But I know we got to take a break here as we're hitting the end of the hour. So we have one more break here before we say goodbye to this hour. One more hour still coming up next. And in that hour, Eric Bentley is going to be joining me. A little FPU Sunbird Sports Show flair to it before we send it off to 790. So take a break. We'll be right back. Hour number two coming up next on 1430 ESPN.
He's got the knowledge.
Because once again, I have to come on air and talk about how right I am once again. In anything that it comes to sports.
He's got the questions.
I'm going to lose it. Are you kidding me? What are we doing here?
He's got the guests. The
20th head coach in Fresno State history here, Matt Entz. Is it hard to believe sometimes still the 20th head coach here in program history?
It's all moved really quickly here over the course of the last 5-6 weeks, but super excited to be here.
Phil Bonatti is the voice for the Central Valley sports leader. Behind the Bench starts now. Brought to you by Helena Agri.
That's right, Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader, taking you all the way up to 6 o'clock today. And then I would highly, highly encourage you to switch over to 790 after that to listen to the FPU Sunbird Sports Show hosted by Paul Metters on the other side there, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. So we'll switch it over to there and get you to your program on the evening side. Currently over on 790, A's and Red Sox. I believe last I checked, my Red Sox leading 2-1 over the Athletics, not Sacramento. Anyways, good to be here. Good to be in this final hour of our show. We got a lot to get into. And I invited Eric Bentley, who's going to be on the show here, and he is in studio. Eric, good to have you. It's been the first time in a little bit of a long time. I've been meaning to get you on, and it's good to find a free hour for you to come on and chat some sports here.
Yeah, I know. A little last minute. I got the text reminder this morning, and we were both on the same page. So we had talked about it last week, but we got it figured out, though. We're good to go.
We were discussing this last week during the, I believe it was the playoff game, for the Grizzlies. Grizzlies end up losing to the eventual champions, which, by the way, congrats to Giants fans out there. If you're a San Jose Giants fan, San Jose Giants, California League champs. They were the best team all year, and there you go.
That's what I was going to say. They looked good all year. So,
Animal Business swept into Lampire, and there you go. So Good to have you in, Eric. Good to talk about a little bit of things here at the top of the show. I wanted to bring up just a little bit of quick hitting topics. I didn't want to mention the Giants. I wanted to save the Giants takes for a little bit until right now, because we did come after a Giants game, a Giants victory that, I mean, as needed as it possibly could be for this team, as we are in dire straits of a potential playoff situation. Are you buying into the fool's gold of what is happening with this Giants team, or is it exactly what I just described? Fool's gold, a little, too late for this team.
I mean, I'd like to say that I'm not buying in, or I haven't bought in, but I still watch the games with the anticipation and sometimes anger that someone who definitely is bought in does.
Yes.
So I guess you would have to say that I'm still riding.
Hey, you'll take it if it happens in terms of it. But as I last checked, I think the Giants are 2 games back of the Mets. And as of this minute, do I have an up-to-minute Mets score right now? It is 2-1 Padres over the New York Mets. In terms of other scores, the Reds have already won. Obviously, the Diamondbacks are a half game ahead of the Giants now. So things still bunched up in this NL wild card. So Giants fans, big Padre fans tonight in terms of that, as the Giants will now travel to L.A. for 1 final 4 game set with the Dodgers. I sit there and it's that is such a big hurdle. That is such a big roadblock, in my opinion, in terms of the Giants' chances, because it just feels like a house of horrors every time you go down to L.A. in a September series where you got to have it. Never seems to yield good results for the Giants, and that's where I'm hanging up on it just a little bit for you.
And especially when it's a Dodgers team that, you know, it kind of all year it almost seems like as if they've been playing for the postseason, haven't necessarily really kind of ramped it up like maybe, you know, going into the season you would expect. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, a very high hurdle trying to go down to L.A. in a situation like that and win some games. But, I mean, you never know.
And ironically, if the Giants end up somehow finding their way into that playoff race, you know who they would probably slate and play in that wild card series? At L.A. So it will just never end.
No, but I'm pretty sure when I was on in this very seat, you know, yeah, at the beginning of the year, I think I said Giants probably best case scenario around 500 fighting for a wild card spot. So, I mean, I guess they're not really far off from where I kind of thought that they were going to be when the season started. But, you know, when you're actually here,
because I think you saw more potential than it was possibly there for this team. And I was kind of being like, first couple weeks or first couple months, I was like, see, I said some things, and I thought this team had some bite to it. And then, of course, they trade for Devers and became one of the worst teams in baseball for a while. And
that post-All-Star break was just baffling.
Mind-numbing.
Hard to watch sometimes. Yeah. And even looking back, I mean, you know, you're watching it in real time, and you're like, oh, no, here we go. And
Does it feel like a missed opportunity this year in terms of the way they've been playing now, in terms of what they had? I just wonder if that's the case as well. And by the way, I'll turn on the mic. Joe, you want to chime in here in this conversation? It's totally fine with you. Did the Giants feel like a missed opportunity this season with the way they've played all year? That's my big question here.
Ugh. I went 100%, right? I mean, especially with the Devers trade and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't – for the Giants fans, I mean, it's an odd year, so I guess you're not going to be having success anyways, right? It's an odd year, right, Eric?
Yeah, odd year, so I guess it was never written in the stars for you.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of people I feel like that like to say that we probably should have done better given the pieces that we added. But, I mean, maybe it's just a little bit of the optimist in me, but those pieces that we added are going to be here for a while, so I'm still hoping that there's some impact to be made further down the line. I don't necessarily know if Buster Posey, you know, was thinking these guys this season are going to turn it around, but we've kind of seen how they've started to adjust once they've gotten here, so I wouldn't necessarily consider it a lost season or a missed opportunity. I think you probably could have been a little bit more excited with something to build on going forward, but you got to look at the rest of the league. I mean,
it just feels
it's a wild card spot regardless.
It just feels like I'm getting a little like, wow, we missed the boat at the trade deadline a little bit. And if you I know it wasn't feeling great at the time, but like you knew the talent of it, but you knew it would have been weird optics if you bought in terms of that with way the team was going in that direction. And so they kind of soft selled with a couple of relievers. And then now we get into situations where relievers were getting in the way of this team finding a few more wins down the stretch. There's a few I could definitely point to where the Giants could have used some of those guys in those high leverage situations. So I think they got just crossed up just a little bit in terms of the way they wanted to address it at the deadline. I would say the swoon hit at maybe the worst possible time of the season.
When you said 100%. Soft sell, right? I mean, when they started to get rid of some of their guys, I mean, at that point you're kind of admitting like season's kind of lost.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, it started turning around a little bit, but I think that says their mindset about the season, right? I mean, they're kind of selling.
Like if you could have added like a plus, like a four starter, like instead of just dealing with like Tristan Beck trying to give you a high leverage start last night. You know what I mean? Maybe there's something there in terms of it, but I don't know. I don't know if I have a full solution for what the Giants could have done this season other than just play better. And maybe Drew Gilbert just needed to be higher up in the big league club for a month earlier. Because that guy's a psycho, and I love watching him have you watched the compilation of Drew Gilbert?
It reminds me how – it kind of makes me feel old, you know, because you see it's like that's a kid. Yeah. Like that's 100% just a kid out there doing kid things, having fun. It is fun to watch, though.
He's giving me Pence vibes. He's just giving me psycho Pence vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had a sack fly in the extra innings today, right?
He did. He caught a couple of rangy fly balls in center. Played a really good center field today, so – I think he's a piece for the Giants moving forward. So, Eric, where would you put it? Any shot? What you need 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, and you need to go, I would say, 6-0 at home. Like 9 of 10, is that?
No, I don't think so.
8 of 10.
I don't think so either.
So it's Cardinals and Rockies. It's Cardinals and Rockies.
Okay, but our offense has not been consistent enough all year long to me to have really any faith in scoring a bunch of runs in a lot of games in a row.
They had one hit in the 10th inning, right, today?
They had one hit going to the 11th. Yeah. One hit going into the 11th inning.
Or today. We score 5 runs in the first 2 innings, and then the bats go silent for the other 7.
Yeesh. It is a day-by-day assess the situation scenario for the Giants.
Honestly, sounds like the Mariner way, right? Just everyone just quiets down and no hits for a couple weeks.
It's gonna I mean every day is gonna mean more. And if they win tomorrow, then you can continue to build the calculus, I would say, and build it out day by day. And then if you win Friday, now suddenly the hope starts.
When's the Dodger series?
This tomorrow. Oh, okay. Tomorrow through Sunday.
So say if they take 3 or 4 from the Dodgers, that doesn't what do you feel? I mean, and you got the Cardinals, what do you call them, Cardinals?
You got the who do they play on Monday?
The Cardinals.
Okay, Cardinals.
Cardinals. All
right. Cardinals. Cardinals, and then you got the Rockies, right? That's got to change your mindset a little bit.
I mean, I'm never going to be totally out.
Right, totally.
I'm never going to be totally out until
– I'm a homer, too, when it comes to, like, my
until
team.
Until the E is there next to the name. If we take 3 from the Dodgers, then,
you're feeling good, right?
Count me right back in.
Mets just tied it up against the Padres, by the way. So 2-2 now. Mets still have the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Marlins. That's what's left. The Cubs are the tough one.
Yeah.
And the Marlins are frisky. I've always thought of that. Who do the Reds have rest of the year? Reds have Cubs for a 4-game set. They play the Pirates. Maybe there's a skiing starts in there. And then they got the Brewers to close out the year. And then am I really realistically looking at the Diamondbacks schedule here moving forward? Who the
I mean, they're half a game up on SF.
Wow.
So.
Wow, this is tough. They host Philadelphia. They host the Dodgers. They go to San Diego to close out the year for the Diamondbacks.
So they might be
that's tough.
Scheduled out.
That's really tough for the Diamondbacks. So if I read those 3 schedules, I feel like the Giants
favors the Giants on paper 100%. When you look at it.
I would go Giants, then Mets, then Reds, and then the Diamondbacks in terms of easiest to toughest.
To get the Dodger games out of the way first is big.
Yeah.
It's big.
I don't know. We'll see. But I just wanted to get a little touch on that. We had a Monday night game. Joe was there, Major Wager, and Eric, you were wearing your Bolts hat, your Chargers hat, as your proud Chargers 2-0. I haven't touched on the Raiders yet. We did touch on them yesterday a little bit in terms of the game. Are the Chargers the team to beat out of the AFC West? I think that's an easy question to answer. The other question I may ask to present is, are the Chargers the surprise team surprise Super Bowl contender out of the AFC? That is my big question mark for you guys here. Is that a bold prediction to say, or bold statement to say?
AFC West Championship, I don't think, is out of the question, but Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, even as a Chargers fan, it's kind of hard for me to be super confident after the playoff woes that we have seen in the last couple of years. I mean, but the way that we've played in the first two games of the year, that's, I mean, fair. Let's be real, there's still a whole lot of season left, but the way we've played in the first two games of the year, I mean, if the defense continues to play the way and that they have, then I could see Justin Herbert being able to sling the ball around enough to keep us in a game versus the Ravens or the Bills or whoever you would want to take out of the AFC.
That's the big difference for me with the Chargers, is that's a defense I've kind of been able to trust this year so far. I mentioned it with the Raider game. As much as the Raiders looked inept in terms of the run defense, let's be fair, the Chiefs and the Raiders have had no ability to run against the Chargers this year, and maybe that's just indicative of how good the Chargers have been on the run side of things. I've been trying to check in on Khalil Mack. It seems like he avoided a season-ending elbow injury. So.
Yeah, last I saw, he was just going on the IR. They're anticipating
only a couple weeks.
Oh. Yeah, only a couple weeks. I think it was a dislocated elbow.
Dislocated elbow. You ever dislocate your elbow?
No, but I've done my shoulder and my knee. It's not very fun.
No, I can't imagine that. So that didn't look fun. But that avoids disaster, I would say, in terms of the Chargers side. I almost feel like they don't miss Joey Bosa in terms of that and the dependence on there.
A cap to not have him anymore either.
And the other thing, too, and I've seen a lot of people talking about it, is just we got a lot of big dudes like on our lines. We've got a lot of big dudes, and we've been able to rotate, get the depth in pretty well. Deion Henley had a nice game on Monday, but we've been able to rotate, get people in and out. So hopefully, and also this is a Chargers team that every single year has dealt with injuries. So it's not like the guys who are on the roster are, you know, not used to coming in and filling in a spot, because we seem to always get injured.
When's that KC game?
Next KC game? It's late in the season. I was checking this Chargers schedule here. You want to beat them again before they get back to Chargers Chiefs next game in Arrowhead December 14th. That is week 14.
That's way far. They play way late. Okay.
Yeah.
The three division games the first 3 weeks of the season for the Chargers has kind of been throwing me off.
And then you have
Miami's doing the same thing. They got New England, Jets, and Buffalo right off the bat.
Well, like, if you want to do the schedule game for the Chargers here, like the Chargers are lined up in a crazy, like, potential one seed, two seed situation if things break a certain way. Like, they go to New York to take on the Giants after this Broncos game. If you beat the Broncos, you get to play at New York against the Giants. You go home Commanders. You know, coin flip there. That'll be a legit game, I would say, between both of those sides. Joe, they'll play your Dolphins in Miami. We know how you feel.
Miami. Miami's going to be bad.
Are the Colts for real? We'll find out that stretch. Indiana Jones is the nickname.
That's been interesting.
I love that nickname. That's one of my favorite nicknames that's popped up.
To see them play Denver and then beat Denver. So that's why I'm like, Chargers?
Take it. Vikings on a Thursday. And then you get a half bye to take on the Titans in Tennessee. You then pick on the Steelers in L.A. You get the Jaguars. Then you get your bye, and then you set up for a really rough stretch. I would say this is the rough stretch.
What week's this?
This is, if my math is 18, 17, 16, 15, 14, 13. Week 13, you go Raiders at home, Eagles at home, at Chiefs, at Cowboys, home Texans, at Broncos. That is your six-game closeout stretch for the Chargers.
Got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
That's going to be a big stretch there, those last six games.
Six games is going to tell you a lot about the team. Yeah, stay healthy is the key thing, right? Because you can feel good right at the beginning of the season, and look at what, especially like Cincinnati or something like that from some seasons before, and just kind of all wheels turn off. Is Herbert turning a corner? Is this a turning the corner Herbert thing, or has it always been Herbert like this? I don't analyze Herbert the way people love to analyze Herbert. But people are loving him in fantasy, and he seems to be hitting the deep ball a lot better.
Look in what terms happens of when you get a good coach.
Well, the deep ball has always been there. That's never been in question. I think what a lot of people who might not pay as close attention to Charger games throughout the year as a normal person, they don't realize, Herbert's ankle injury was really affecting his mobility last year.
Yeah.
But it was kind of less noticed because he was still able to get himself out of situations. He's able to sling the ball downfield because he's got a rocket for an arm. But the difference has been his ability to get out of the pocket quickly when he needs to. The offensive line's been great and have been giving him so much time to throw that a lot of times he doesn't need to really move around that much. But when he has needed to move, I mean, you look at that clip of the first down at the end of the game against the Chiefs where he ran for the first down and then kind of showboats with the slide a little
bit.
Like, yeah, he's like, I've had this in my game the whole time. I had an ankle injury last year, you know, so... For me personally, this is the Herbert that I knew has kind of always been there, but it's fun to get him to watch him get some more attention from others who might not have been as closely following.
You going to say something?
No, as a Dolphins fan, I hate it. I hate.
I wasn't going to go there.
I know, but you know,
was Tua before Herbert? No,
he was a pick before Herbert.
Was he the pick? Been,
they yes, mm-hmm. they picked Tua over Herbert.
I blocked that out of my mind.
No, I didn't, and it makes me sad because I like Herbert and I see what he's doing with them and. Breaking records, and now he's got a good coach, and it's really scary.
And Tua's openly admitting, I can't do what Josh Allen.
If you're under my ball, you got to like make sure you track it because it's not going to go where you think it's going to go.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
Great mental space for your player tomorrow. I'm
just dreading tomorrow, dude. Everyone's talking about cool football. Right. He's got the Chargers now. And
let's take a break here because Lynn, let's talk about the future here because I want to go through the Benatti Blitz. We're going to pick the games this week. It's a little earlier in the week for it, but I want to do it. We're going to pick the week 3 slate of games next here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader as we roll along here in this 5 o'clock hour. Eric, you've never done one of these before, I don't think. A Benatti Blitz, where we're going to pick the games one by one.
No, I don't think so.
We got the music queued up, ready to go, and we're just going to go down the list. It should be a lot of fun.
I'm supposed to have music queued
no,
up?
No, I have music
queued.
Okay, I just made Joe poop his pants.
Yeah, I was like, wait, what am I doing here?
Unprepared.
Right. Come on, Joe. Where were you in the production meeting? All right.
Oh, man.
Anyways, we don't do production meetings. Production meeting is me handing a Joe a paper 5 minutes before the show starts.
I was late to the production meeting
It's
today.
Fine, Joe. It's fine. The Giants helped you out by winning in extras. All right, let's take a let's hit the music right now. IS week 3, where we start learning some things about some teams, and then we start learning nothing about some teams. But I know one thing, and that is Thursday Night Football, Miami and Buffalo here on Thursday Night Football, which you can listen right here on 1430 ESPN. Josh Allen taking on the guy who says he can't be Josh Allen, which is Tua Tagovailoa. The Dolphins are in real trouble. 0-2 to start the year could potentially slip in this division even further. What a funny timeline it would be if they ended up pulling this one off. Boy, would help a lot of people in those survivor picks, wouldn't that? I'm picking Buffalo. I'm putting my money on it, though. Thursday night, things get weird, but surely Buffalo can handle business here at home. What do you got, Eric?
In Buffalo. Buffalo.
Yes, Buffalo.
Josh Allen.
What do you got?
Miami's going to take it. I'm a Dolphin fan in the end. I'm just going to take it.
Joe's sinking with the ship. Joe's going down. He's the violin players on the Titanic.
I can't go against them. I won't bet against them in the end. That's how hardcore I am.
Chloe, what do you got?
Give me Buffalo.
All right.
Miami's going to take it.
Next up, Packers and Browns in Cleveland. This would be so much more fun of a game in December. I said that before, but this is just kind of boring on that Fox, just muggy 10 a.m. Kenny Albert all over it screams to me in terms of the broadcast. Surely this one would be over soon, but I would get a sense that people can get a little nervous around this game if we're sitting there and it's a 7-point game about 4 minutes left in this third quarter. I'm just saying, we could be paying attention to that. Regardless, Green Bay could legitimately be the best team in the NFC the way they played. They've been on a long week. I don't see any shot they lose to this Cleveland Browns team who couldn't really muster up anything against Baltimore. Give me the Packers on the road.
Cleveland might muck it up a little bit, but I still got Green Bay.
Myles Garrett, still scary man.
I don't think they even put up a fight. Green Bay's in a clean house.
I'm going to agree. Green Bay.
Quick. Myles Garrett or Micah Parsons?
I like Micah. I like what Mikey does.
I go Parsons.
I like Micah.
Parsons.
I'm a Myles Garrett guy. That guy is freaky.
I mean, he is. I wouldn't want to go against either of them.
Yeah.
Micah's disgusting.
I've seen Myles Garrett in person in a game. That's terrifying, the way that man moves. Next up, Colts at Titans in Tennessee on a CBS channel at 10 a.m. The Colts, Indiana Jones, the legend of Indiana Jones. Will his next crusade be a better one outside of his arena? He's won two home games, surely potentially handed to him in that second game. The Titans, you know, they've been hanging around in certain games. Cam Ward's shown some little flashes here and there. A home underdog divisional matchup certainly can provide some drama. This one feels one possession-y to me. It's not a given. I will pick the Colts, but I'm not feeling great about it.
I think the Jim Irsay legacy season goes on the road and gets it done, picks up a win, Colts.
No Colts.
I jumped on the Colts bandwagon when they destroyed Miami, so I think Danny Dimes breaks records. Everyone forgets about Peyton Manning. Danny Dimes.
I'm going to give it to the Colts, but I'm going to say it's going to be a close game.
So the Titans will win because we all picked the Colts. By the way, it just screams to me, Sunday Night Football pregame, Cam Ward arrives with first NFL win. I just see it now. I just see it now when
I'm
they're going through
Cam
the highlight
reel. I'm a big Cam Ward fan. I hope he does it, honestly.
Next up. Bengals at Vikings. It is the battle of backups between Jake Browning and Carson Wentz. That's right. If you had those two playing quarterback in football in 2025, congrats on your bingo card. This is as least interesting of a game as many can be, although I am interested in seeing what Wentz can be like as a Viking. By the way, Carson Wentz, first guy in NFL history to start six straight seasons at quarterback for at least one game with six different teams. Congrats to Carson Wentz on that record. He will not get a victory, though. The Cincinnati Bengals will do it because Jake Browning has as many 300-yard passing games as Patrick Mahomes in the last 2 years.
I'm with you. Jake Browning probably gets it done. He's thrown to some pretty good receivers, too, when you're throwing it up to Jamar Chase and those guys. Kind of makes your job a little bit easier as a quarterback.
I didn't think you guys would take Cincy, but I mean, I saw what Browning did, and I like Cincy, too. Yeah. Cincy.
Wow.
I'm going to have to agree with all of it.
Holy moly. All four on Cincy.
I didn't think you guys would have said Cincy. I didn't. Wow. Yeah. I thought you would have taken Minnesota.
In my gut, what they did to me on Sunday night of watching that game against
the
Falcons,
so bad.
I objectively don't want to pick them.
They look so bad.
Just simply for that.
Yeah.
Next up. Pittsburgh at New England. Aaron Rodgers going on the road to take on the Patriots. Rodgers barely has ever played against the Patriots, by the way, since up until the last few years we played for the Jets. But Aaron Rodgers doesn't quite have as much success against New England. The Steelers, man, they got bullied last week in the run game against a Seahawks team that doesn't really run the ball. And a pass rush where the Seahawks don't really pass rush the ball. And yet Pittsburgh was getting bullied last week to it. The Patriots do two good things. They run the football and they pass rush. I feel very confident in my New England Patriots, which means I'm probably going to be wrong. But I'm going to pick them anyway. Give me the Patriots to win at home over the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, we're only two games into the Aaron Rodgers experiment in Pittsburgh. I don't really know how I feel about it, but I am going to go with the Steelers. I think the experience of Aaron Rodgers gets it done.
Yeah, I don't think Tomlin loses or gives up another 30. I don't think it's happening. I think I like the Steelers in that one.
I'm going to also take the Steelers. I feel like they got it.
The run game of the Patriots, though. It's scary.
All right. Next up. Rams at Eagles. This is a really good one in Philadelphia. Matchup where certainly it will not be the snowstorm we once saw back, 7 months ago in January. Maybe 8, maybe 9 months ago, actually. Anyways, I'm not good at math. The Rams certainly coming in 2-0, solid, taking care of business. The Eagles, 2-0. Wasn't as pretty as maybe some people have thought in terms of it. The Rams, did they shore up their run game stopping ability where Saquon has been able to run over them the last couple of games they have played? This game will tell us a lot about these two teams. I believe I am picking the Rams on the road. Why not give me the Rams to go to 3-0?
I'm actually going to go the Rams, too. Maybe a little Davante Adams breakout game as well. Eagles, yeah, like you said, didn't really look that great in their win last week. I think the Rams get it done on the road.
I'm going to stick with what I said from the mini camp, And I said the Rams are going to be undefeated for a little bit.
Wow.
And I'd say they're going to beat the Eagles.
Okay. Chloe, what do you got?
I'm taking the Rams. I'm excited to see, you know, their run game again. And it wasn't pretty with the Eagles.
Puka Nacua, wide receiver one right now in fantasy and in our hearts as well. Next up, Jets and Bucks. Tampa Bay, man, has been phenomenal in the last 2 minute stretches of their football games. I do feel like the drama will not exist in this one. Baker Mayfield should have a day in this battle. I can't even tell you who the New York Jets backup quarterback is, and I don't care to know. It sounds like Justin Fields is out. I have no idea. I think it's Tyrod Taylor. Is that what
it's
I was
Taylor.
Told? Yes.
I was in a guest
yes,
boil.
I think it is Tyrod Taylor going up against Tampa. I love what Baker Mayfield said in his post press conference. I don't know if you saw the video. He just walked up and just did, yes. And that's how I feel with Baker Mayfield, the quarterback for the Bucks. Give me the Bucks. Yes, give me them.
I've loved Baker ever since he was at Oklahoma, you know, doing his thing. Probably my second favorite quarterback to watch outside of Justin Herbert. Give me Baker and the Bucks.
Yeah. I mean, when he was a rookie and he did the whole rookie passing TDs, I mean, it was obvious he's going to be somebody. Browns are just terrible. Bucks all day.
Bucks.
Johnny Manziel failed, so Baker Mayfield could fly. Is that what we're feeling?
1,000%. Loved Jets, Johnny man. Football.
I mean, the Jets are going to be really bad this year.
Can't wait.
Hey,
I love
hey,
it.
They're on my picks. <Can't wait.
laughs> Don't be picking them often, I'm telling
Don't
you.
Don't be doing it. Next up, Raiders at Commanders, a 10 a.m. game on Fox. And the Raiders come in a little wounded in terms of the way they've been playing football. Their run game has certainly not yielded anything in terms of Ashton Jeanty. Is there panic into it? Geno Smith, most turnovers by a quarterback so far this season. Is there panic to it? Or have they played a legitimate defense on a Monday night? It is a short week. It is going on the East Coast. Commanders certainly don't sound like they will have Jaden Daniels, but will the pieces be stronger around them? I got to find an upset somewhere. I think I'll go Raiders because I think the defense can bounce back against the backup quarterback. I still have faith in Pete Carroll getting a team right after a loss. I'll pick the Raiders on the road.
Yeah, I had Commanders as my picks that I made on Tuesday. Forgot about Jaden Daniels probably not going. I don't think the Raiders are as bad as the Chargers made them look on Monday. So I'm going to flip it up and I'm going to go Raiders too.
Nah, I still like Washington. I think Washington will still take care of business. I do like what Pete's doing, but I think Washington's a better team still.
Washington all the way. I've said it from the beginning. I've always liked Washington. You know, they have their home field advantage. I still think their defense is looking good, so I'm going to take Washington.
It's going to be a coin flip. Coin flip for sure. Next up, the Falcons and the Panthers in Carolina. The Falcons coming in after a win over Minnesota. Michael Penix and company handling business. The Panthers too little too late against Arizona. Of all the teams, it just feels lethargic and constipated on offense with the Carolina Panthers. I don't feel like it's as free-flowing as it can be. Although I will say, Tet McMillan is looking like a dude. I've seen some plays from him. He certainly looks like an epic NFL talent in terms of it at the wide receiver position. Isn't enough to get a win in this game. I still think Atlanta's a little more talented. I'll go with the Falcons on the road in the division.
Bijan Robinson, huge game for the Falcons. I think he's going to get probably over 200 all-purpose yards, 2 touchdowns. Give me the Falcons.
Yeah, that's an easy pick. Carolina looks terrible. They all year last year. They will this year, too. I don't like Carolina.
Give me the Falcons.
Falcons. Next up, Houston and Jacksonville. Interesting game, especially I feel like it's a back-against-the-wall game for one of these teams. The Texans certainly don't want to fall to 0-3 after that tough loss on the road, on a short week. Now they're on the road, and they take on a Jacksonville team who has desperately been trying to give the ball away in the red zone and in opportune situations. Trevor Lawrence, a little bit squirrely when it comes to the passing game. I know Houston's defense has been swarming. This feels like a big-time bounce back for the Houston Texans. I want to pick the Jaguars, but the Texans absolutely need it here. Give me Houston on the road against Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'm going with the Texans, too. My mom's a Texans fan, so I'm just going to roll with it.
There you go.
I think this is my upset. I think the Jaguars pull it out here. They should have beat Cincy last week. I think I think they'll take the Texans on. I think they'll be, Texans have not been looking so good all year. I think they'll start slow, and this is going to continue it.
I have to agree that the Texans aren't looking too good, and you know the Jags have their home field, so I'm gonna take Jackson.
Houston's played two tough teams.
They have.
The Rams and the Bucks.
I get it.
That's all I want to
point
out.
I get it. But
those are two
time,
playoff teams, I think.
I think the Jaguars, they showed up a little bit last week more than you know I thought they would. But I like Jacksonville.
For sure. Next up, Broncos at Chargers in SoFi. This Charger team is flying high, feeling great. All the recipe for a team that could certainly make a lot of noise in the National Football League. But can this be a letdown, or will the Broncos finally figure out how to close out a football game this week? Man, that was a tough loss of any loss I'd ever seen for a team to take. Leverage. I remember when my team lost to a Geno Smith Jets team back in like 2017 when we used leverage. Nick Folk kicked the game-winning field goal, and we lost to it. I think that's the last time the Jets beat us. Anyways, regardless, this is a big game for both teams. Really massive game, I think, for Denver. If the Chargers win this, man, it is really off and running for them in the division. I have faith in the Chargers. I believe in the Chargers. Their defense has been swarming. Give me the Chargers to win a home game over the Denver Broncos.
I'm going Chargers too, obviously, as a Chargers fan, but they do need to get the run game going. If the run game does not get going, the offense is probably going to have some tough times moving the ball. Could be a little bit closer than the Chargers want. Run game needs to get going, but Chargers.
For sure.
Denver's disappointing. I don't like what they're doing. You're already watching Bo Nix argue with Peyton on the sideline. I don't think they're going anywhere, so LA should handle business.
It's bound to happen.
I know, right? I do it all the time.
I have to agree with everything everyone said. Let's see the Chargers, see how they can play this game.
All right.
They've been looking strong, so I'm going to take them.
Looking great. Next up, Saints and Seahawks in Seattle. I don't have to spend too much time on this. I do think New Orleans has shown a little bit of fight, a little bit of feistiness. By the way, weird that they're opening three straight games against the NFC West this year. That's just quite strange scheduling quirk for them, but I'll give them credit where credit's due. They've been down a position. They've had the football to try to at least win a football game against their last two opponents, the Cardinals and the 49ers. So I'll give them the credit there. But Seattle, I think, is just a step above. Seattle needs a win at home. This feels like a much different environment for Spencer Rattler and company to try to go in and try to get a win. Feels like a Seattle win all the way. Give me the Seattle Seahawks to get the
tough
win.
Tough conference for New Orleans to play out of the gate. But yeah, Seahawks just really good this year. Overpower the Saints.
Do you think Kamara lasts all season there, or does he go to a contender in the middle of it here?
I think he's too much of a point for that Saints team to go anywhere in a trade bait.
Why not get something for him?
Somebody will do a Godfather offer somewhere.
Saints aren't winning this one, sorry.
I'll explore that later. I'm interested
it's
in
interesting,
that.
Interesting, right? Yeah. He's so good still.
Yeah.
It's looking so good for the Seahawks, so I'm going to take them.
Next up, Cowboys and Bears. This is the game they're giving us in terms of the prime time or the late afternoon for the everybody. Cowboys, man, win or lose, they are entertaining. I'll give them credit there, and credit is due. Some people are talking Dak MVP talks already. I've been seeing some of that flittered around in the national conversation. The Bears have not showed up in the last five quarters of football, especially on the defensive end. They don't have Jalen Johnson available. This is going to get ugly, and I think it's going to get ugly quick. Give me the Cowboys on the road over Chicago.
Bears are bad until proven otherwise, Cowboys.
Yeah, it'd be really hard. I mean, maybe this is another upset. I mean, Caleb, he's still slinging it. Who knows? Maybe this is it. Cowboys are bad too, but I'm still going to pick the Cowboys.
Unfortunately, I'm going to also have to pick the Cowboys as much as I don't want to. It's rough out there for the Bears right now.
I would love for Williams to get his first win against Cowboys.
True, but
that'd be good.
It's not looking too good for them so far.
Next up, 2-0 Arizona, 2-0 San Francisco. Winner would surely at least be in a good spot moving forward. And the Niners are certainly sounding like they're pushing Purdy to play in this game. Interesting decision. We'll see, especially in light of turf toe news. We talked about that at the top of the show. The Arizona Cardinals come in. I would say the Niners do struggle against Arizona from time to time. Running quarterbacks can be an issue sometimes for this 49ers team. It's not going to be stand-up, sit-back quarterbacks like they've last played the last 2 weeks. If it is Mac Jones, it'll be close. I think this is going to come down to the wire. It's going to come down to potentially a field goal. We'll see where it comes down to. But I'll keep faith in the faithful. Give me the 49ers to win at home.
Yeah, Arizona does tend to make these matchups with the Niners probably a little more frisky than I'm sure the Niners would like. Give me Kyler Murray and the Cardinals on this one.
I like the Cardinals, too. I think they're going to pull it out. I don't like what the Niners are doing. And if they force Purdy back, I think it's going to be even worse. But Cardinals.
I have to agree with what you said earlier, Phil, that there's a possibility that the Cardinals are better than what people are expecting. But I'm obviously going to pick the Niners here. But we just have to be smart with who we're putting in this game. And I feel like we have so many other players that we know work for us, and Mac Jones is already looking strong. So as long as we play it smart, I'm gonna take the Niners.
Phil loves Mac Jones. He loves to see him play.
I woke up at 7 in the morning to watch Germany Colts versus Patriots, and I'll never have that morning back.
Mac Jones will forever be in your heart.
Never have that. I'll never have 56-0 or whatever it was against Buffalo in the wild card round in 2021. I'll never have that game back too. Nobody remembers that game.
I completely forgot about that.
You remember that?
I do remember that.
I was laughing hysterically after a while.
I did. That was 2021.
2021
man,
playoffs.
So recent.
Woo!
And I was Mac Jones too, right? And
it was.
Yeah, oh, man, that's awesome.
Last game. The 0-2 Chiefs at the 0-2 New York Football Giants in MetLife on a Sunday night. Do or die. Gotta have it for both of these teams. Surely the Chiefs won't go down to 0-3, right? Right? I don't know. This offense hasn't been on the cylinders it has been in terms of what we've seen the last few years. The Giants boast a really nice pass rush if that's the strength of their team, and the Chiefs' offensive line certainly hasn't provided Mahomes the time he's needed. If the Philadelphia Eagles gave him fits last week, surely the Giants have somewhat of the same thing to say in terms of it. Man, would this be an interesting story if the New York Giants can beat the Kansas City Chiefs at home on primetime. We will be seeing the red lights and sirens momentarily after that football game. But surely the NFL gods will say otherwise, and the Kansas City Chiefs will somehow pull it out and go to 1-2 on the year.
Yeah, I was going to say Malik Nabers probably not going to have the kind of monster game that he had last week. I'm going Chiefs, and I guarantee there will be at least two flags that Twitter or some other social media will talk about for no reason whatsoever.
I'm going to ride the Russ train. I think
Russ
goes 1-2.
Wow.
He was a fumble away from beating the Cowboys. I'll say that. He was a fumble. It was a gross fumble, and not one you want to see your quarterback ever do. But he was a fumble away. I think he sinks the Chiefs.
The Chiefs go 0-3
for the first time under Andy Reid.
Wow.
I think so.
Gosh, I hope the Chiefs go 0-3. I'm gonna take New York. I'm gonna take the Giants in this. I mean, they look good, and yeah, their defense is doing better than I was expecting. So I'm a side with Joe right now.
Ooh, gonna take Russ too. She's gonna ride the Russ train.
And we will of course save our picks for next week for the Monday night Lions and Ravens game. How do you guys feel? Wow, there's some hot takes in there. There were some bold predictions. Some agreements, some disagreements.
We're all kind of probably be 500 on the picks.
Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah.
That's how it always usually goes. It always usually goes. All right. By the way, that Benatti Blitz brought to you by Grocery Outlet. Grocery Outlet, part of the Tailgate Ready campaign. If you want to win two tickets to a Fresno State game and $100 to your tailgate, go visit your Grocery Outlet in Northwest Fresno, Downtown Fresno, Southeast Fresno, and Kerman and Sanger. Sign up today by visiting the Grocery Outlets at those locations. Next winner will be picked ahead of the next Fresno State game, which is in a couple weeks against Nevada. So sign up today. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have the close of the show next on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader. All right, welcome back to Behind the Bench here on 1430 ESPN Fresno, the Valley's local sports leader here on this wonderful Wednesday, wrapping up our show. And then we'll be relinquishing this studio and getting it up to our FPU Sunbird friends over there. Eric, you had a little intel on who's coming on. Who's coming on the FPU Sunbird show?
Yeah, looks like they're going to be talking men's soccer.
Okay, all right. Their season underway, right?
Yeah, just got underway pretty recently. But yeah, they've been playing well. Fun team to watch if you get a chance to go out and watch them.
Well, you get to know them here today.
Also true.
6 o'clock, which will be over on 790. So as soon as we wrap up, switch that dial, 790. Palmetters will have the FPU men's soccer team coming on here for the time being. Other schedule news, just real quick to go over it for you. Tomorrow we'll have Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D, 2 to 3. He'll be back on my show 3 to 5 tomorrow as we take it to the Dolphins and Bills game, kickoff at 5 p.m. on 1430. A's and Red Sox in the morning from Boston, 10 a.m., 10:35. First pitch, 10 a.m. pregame over on 790. On Friday, we'll have the Sportsline Bulldog Hour, Tony D, with from 2 to 3. We'll have my show for just 1 hour. That's right, 1 hour. Got to get some time to get down to Visalia. So we're going to sign off at 4 o'clock on Friday. Kickoff is going to be 7:30. Our pregame is going to be at 7 p.m. for Friday Night Lights between Hanford and Redwood. Eric, you're Hanford and Redwood, that big rivalry down there in the South Valley, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been covering Bullpups a little bit. You know, my parents live in Hanford, so it's been an up and down start for the Bullpups.
What do you think of the Mineral King Bowl? Have you been to that stadium before?
I have quite a few times, you know, former band guy. There was a band competition there at the Mineral King Bowl. I'm sure it hasn't changed much since I was there 20 years ago.
Just can't wait to see that stadium, and we'll be there, like I said, 7 p.m. Yeah, me and Palmetters on the call there. A's and Pirates over on 790 from Pittsburgh, 3 o'clock. Saturday, Palmetters show, 10 a.m. to noon. Central Valley Sports Report on 1430. Giants and Dodgers will be at the 540 pregame, 610 first pitch from L.A. And then on Sunday, here's your NFL slate. Rams and Eagles are going to be at 1430, starting 9 a.m. pregame, 10 a.m. kickoff. Over on 790 at 9:30 a.m., it'll be the pregame of the Raiders at Commanders, 10 a.m. kickoff there over on 790. At 1430 at 1:10 p.m., the Niners and the Cardinals will kick off, and we will have that broadcast for you as soon as the Rams and Eagles concludes. And then at 5 o'clock, we will bring you that Giants and Chiefs game on Sunday Night Football, starting at 5 p.m. on 1430. We'll be back Monday with another two-hour edition of Behind the Bench and get you to Major Wager Monday night, Lions and Ravens. Back to our normal time, right, Joe? We're glad to be back to our regularly scheduled 5 p.m. kickoff. 7 p.m. might have nearly killed us all.
I didn't get home till like 11 or whatever it was. That was a long night.
Yeah, I will tell you this, folks. That is the last time this season we will do a 7 o'clock kickoff on Monday night.
Imagine the East Coast people. I mean,
I said this
because you were over there. I couldn't even imagine.
I experienced this last year, Eric. I don't know if I told you this on the East Coast. I'm watching Jets and Steelers, and I'm watching the fourth quarter, and it's 11:45 at night. And I'm like, how do people function? How would people function doing this every week on the weekday?
Yeah, there's a reason why the college football polls are all screwed up, but that's a conversation for another time.
I was up in my bed in the house we were staying in Boston, and I'm watching 1:30 a.m. Fresno State, Nevada on a Friday night, and I'm just like locked in at 1:30 in the morning. Just
the closest I've come to feeling that is when Fresno State goes to play at Hawaii.
And guess what?
They have the
we're doing that
late
this week.
Kickoff.
Are you ready
this
for
this week? I'm ready for the Hawaii
Are
test.
You ready for a 9 p.m.? Everybody getting in their pajamas, right? You're cozying in.
Get a blanket.
Yeah. I love those games. When they have the late night games, like Arizona when they play and stuff like that on ESPN, I'll sit up and watch those games. Those are fun.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
We got 30 seconds, Eric. How do you feel about this Fresno State team right now?
I feel good so far. Hawaii's always tough. Doesn't matter the team. Hawaii's always tough going to the islands.
Yeah. Best running game we've had ever?
Yeah. I mean, I was encouraged with what EJ was able to do throwing the ball a little bit last week. But, yeah, I mean, just we got some dogs there running the ball.
I presented this. Name me a deeper running back running situation in college football than the Fresno State Bulldogs right now. I don't think you can find one. I don't think you can.
Not that's produced like they have in the first four games.
No.
Luke looks so explosive.
Luke, Donaldson, so Arsenault, Ramirez, and there's one more. Gilliam.
Yeah, Luke, once he hides behind those linemen and finds him, he's gone.
Never seen it like it. All right, guys. I appreciate it as always. Appreciate you guys' help. Joe, thanks for hopping on at last minute.
Yes, sir.
You'll be doing the FPU Sunbird Sports Show. Eric, appreciate you coming in.
Yeah, always fun.
Chloe, appreciate it as always on the video side.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll be back tomorrow, 3 o'clock, for a show of Fashion Furniture. Tune over to 790 FPU Sunbird Sports Show starting in a little bit. We'll see you tomorrow.